The history of math is our intellectual foundation to understanding science. Science, beautiful, awesome, wonderful science. It's the creative foundation to our ineffable future. I'm Gabrielle Burchak, and this is my podcast, Math, Science, History. In the year 415, the infamous philosopher and mathematician Hypatia of Alexandria, Egypt, was savagely murdered by church monks. This murder shocked the Roman community and its government leaders. Hypatia was known far and wide as a respected philosopher, mathematician, government advisor, and a professor. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, is a book that I wrote that looks not just at the circumstances surrounding her death, but also at the sum of her entire life. I weave in the details of her education, disciples, Neoplatonic philosophies, female contemporaries, and the many mathematics that she wrote and taught about. There is truly more to Hypatia's life than her death. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, written by me, Gabrielle Burchak, is now on sale on Amazon. Buy your copy today. Have you ever been in a moment of your life where you wished something would change, but it doesn't? Time passes by and nothing changes. Sometimes graduate school can feel that way. Sometimes getting a job or working towards a job promotion can feel that way. Sometimes an experiment can feel that way, like when you're watching a pot of water and waiting for it to boil. Yet, when you look back on your life, you realize that it has changed. It just took what felt like infinitely small measurements of time to make that change occur. Through hindsight, when we remember those moments that felt like forever, we can see how much of our lives changed. In science and in mathematics, this is known as the quantum Zeno effect. Zeno of Ilia was one of four prominent philosophers who attended the Iliadic school of philosophy. The other three prominent philosophers included Xenophanes, Parmenides, and Melissos. Zeno was born around 490 BCE and was close to his friend Parmenides. We know about Zeno because of the writings of Plato. In his work titled Parmenides, Plato alludes that Parmenides and Zeno were lovers. He writes, quote, "Parmenides, being at that time quite an old man with gray hair and a handsome and noble countenance, and certainly not over 65 years of age, Zeno, about 40 years old, tall and elegant, said to have been the favorite of Parmenides," unquote. So, needless to say, Zeno was not just Parmenides' arm candy, he was also his special someone. But as most women would agree with me, it is wrong to objectify Zeno because there is more than meets the eye. Zeno was also very brilliant and came to be known as a philosopher who mastered the skill of contradiction. Aristotle wrote about Zeno's methodologies and believed that Zeno never really searched for truth in his argumentation. Instead, he argued for argument's sake. This form of argument makes sense because his paradoxes are like puzzles that do not so much require a dialect between two individuals founded on truth, but rather a creative analysis based on possibilities. This information doesn't come directly from Zeno's writing. It comes from the teachings of Socrates and the writings of Plato. We do not know exactly how many paradoxes that Zeno wrote. At this current time, we know of 10 paradoxes. However, it is possible that Zeno wrote up to 40 paradoxes. One of Zeno's most popular paradoxes is Achilles and the Tortoise. In this paradox, Achilles is racing a tortoise. As the race begins, Achilles gives the tortoise a head start of 100 meters. Then Achilles runs and meets the tortoise at the 100 meter mark. However, the tortoise is still ahead of him by a certain distance. In this case, let's say the tortoise is ahead of him by 50 meters. That means Achilles now must run 50 meters to catch up with the tortoise. So, Achilles runs the 50 meters, but now the tortoise is leading by 25 meters. And so, Achilles runs the 25 meters, only to realize that the tortoise is 12 meters ahead of him. Thus, Achilles is always behind the tortoise, which leads to this paradox that Achilles will never be able to catch up to the tortoise. This idea is impossible because we all know that Achilles would be able to catch up to the tortoise. Regardless, this puzzle has been pondered and questioned by mathematicians, physicists, and philosophers for thousands of years. The alternate to this paradox is called the dichotomy paradox. In this paradox, an object will never move a certain distance unless it meets the halfway point first. However, because there is no defined distance, there is no halfway defined distance. For the object to move to half the length, it would first have to move to the first half of the first half. In other words, it would have to move a quarter of the distance. But to move to that first halfway mark, it would have to meet the halfway mark before that halfway mark. In other words, the distance between the beginning and the end point becomes so small that it is impossible for the object to move in the first place. And the reason this is called a dichotomy is because it requires the constant process of splitting the distance into two parts. The next paradox is called the paradox of place. This paradox centers around the idea of displacement and states that if everything in the universe has a place, then that place has a place, and that place has a place. Then there is a paradox of the grain of millet, which states that if a grain of millet doesn't make a sound when it falls, but if 1,000 grains of millet make a sound, then 1,000 nothings become something. However, with technology today, we now know that even a single grain of millet makes a sound when it falls. The paradox of the stadium proposes two rows of runners, with each row consisting of the same number of people. In this case, we will say four people in a row. Each row of four people runs on the same lane in a straight track. So, in this paradox, there are two lanes on a running track, and on each lane there are four people. The runners in lane 1 run 400 meters from point A to point B. The runners in lane 2 also run 400 meters. However, they're going from point B to point A in the opposite direction. In each row, they are moving at the same velocity. And the concept behind this paradox is that as each group of runners approach the center, the amount of time it takes them to reach the center will be doubled to reach the other end of the track. It's a practical mathematical problem. Zeno also has three paradoxes that look at plurality. The first one is the argument from denseness. The idea behind this paradox is, if there are many things, that amount of many things is finite. There is no more or no less. However, in that finite number of things, there are things in between those things, which makes the things unlimited. If you don't understand, that's okay. I'll explain. This particular paradox actually leads to concepts in set theory, which I have talked about in podcast number 28 called Shave and a Haircut. Without going into too much confusing detail, the concept behind this is that if there are a lot of things, let's say apples, if there are a lot of apples, they are limited in number. But if you take those apples and you line them up, you will find that there is an apple between the third and fifth apple. This shows that for the third and the fifth apple to be distinct, there must be a fourth apple between them. However, for the third, fourth, and fifth apples to be distinct, there have to be apples between those apples. What Zeno is doing here is contradicting himself when he says that if there is a set of things with a definite number, it must be finite. It's a fun paradox that can actually be discussed for an infinite amount of time. Yeah, I know, that's a really bad pun. The second paradox on plurality is called the argument from finite size, which argues that if many things exist, they do not have a size. If the things do not have a size, then it is a sizeless object. Additionally, if we take a sizeless object and join it with another sizeless object, it is nothing. Finally, the third part of this argument states that if this sizeless object is extended, it has parts. Because it has parts, the sizeless object goes on endlessly. The extended object is infinite. The third known paradox on plurality is called the argument from complete divisibility. This paradox argues that a thing, a body, is divisible. However, these parts that come out of division have no size, and the parts with any magnitude remain incompletely divided. As a result, we have parts of dimensionless parts. But if the parts are nothing, then so is the sum of the parts. In other words, if we had a bunch of zeros and we added those zeros, we would still have zero. Finally, we get to one of my favorite paradoxes, the arrow paradox. This paradox argues that in order to have motion, an object must change its occupied position. Aristotle describes Zeno's paradox, stating, quote, that it is impossible for a thing to be moving during a period of time because it is impossible for it to be moving at an indivisible instant. This assumes that a period of time is made up of indivisible instants, which cannot be granted, unquote. What Zeno is saying is that at a particular place on a linear trajectory for an arrow, at a specific moment, that arrow is at rest, but only at that moment. After that moment, it's in another location which is also at rest. In other words, it is not traveling during a moment. And the arrow, at its designated size, let's say 2 meters long, occupies an equal space for that instant. As a result, the entire length of its motion consists of moments of an arrow at rest. Thus, Zeno argues that the arrow cannot be moving. But because the arrow moves from point A to point B, the time consists of a multitude of instants. This analogy helps us to understand how to measure instantaneous velocity. Mathematically, this concept is used in calculus, and it is defined as the derivative of the object's average velocity. In physics, this concept helps us to understand a continuous function of time and determine a particle's velocity at any point while it is in motion. This paradox is foundational to understanding the Turing paradox, also known as the quantum Zeno effect. It is called the Turing paradox because it is also similar to a paradox proposed by British scientist Alan Turing in 1958. The idea behind this is that in quantum systems, a system cannot change if you are watching it. However, instead of watching it, physicists can rapidly measure a system in its known initial state. What is most exciting about this ancient concept is that it is used in science and has been verified through experimentation. The idea behind this is that by rapidly measuring a quantum system, physicists can slow down its evolution and freeze it completely while they measure it. They can keep the system in its initial state for any chosen finite time on one condition. They must perform a multitude of rapid measurements. Back to Zeno's paradox. Like that arrow that does not move in that one instant, the quantum system cannot change since it is constantly being observed through rapid measurements while it is in its initial state at time equals zero. By observing and measuring it in its initial state, they can apply the process of probability by projecting the system's state at a later time and apply it to the state that they want the system to evolve to. The math behind this is not too complex. If you are an undergraduate student studying calculus or calculus-based physics, you could probably understand the math that goes into freezing a quantum Zeno effect. I will place an excellent link to a video on my website at mathsciencehistory.com and at Patreon to follow along if you are so interested. The link is called How to Freeze a Quantum State, Quantum Zeno Effect, and is on a channel called Pretty Much Physics. I love this channel. It is one of the best mathematical explanations I have seen on the quantum Zeno effect. Sometimes life feels like it is standing still, and that is really not a bad place to be. It gives you a chance to observe and think about everything in that instant. By taking a moment to observe the world, listen carefully to what we are hearing. Think about what we smell and consider how we feel. We slow down. It freezes us for just an instant. And after that instant, you're going to keep moving forward. And you won't be in the same place you are now. You will be moving towards goals, plans, dreams, loved ones, maybe towards work where you can enjoy the company of your favorite coworkers, or maybe towards home where you can enjoy a warm dinner and a cuddle with your pet. And even if you don't have any of these things at this moment, I hope you know that like that quantum state that encompasses a position in a three-dimensional environment with momentum, angular momentum, spin, time, and energy, you are moving and evolving. It is exciting to think that as humans, we have something very much in common with an ancient paradox, an arrow, a philosophy, physics, and mathematics. That is the power of math, science, and history. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining me at Math Science History. Please remember to subscribe to the show. Also, if you could leave a rating or review, it would be so appreciated. Those ratings and reviews really help to increase my listenership, which helped me to get more sponsors, which helped me to keep the podcast up and running. If you want to learn more about the history of math and science, please visit me at mathsciencehistory.com. And if you like what you're listening to, please feel free to click on that cup of coffee image and buy me a cup of coffee, or two, or three, or four, because every cup of coffee that you buy helps me to pay for the expenses that go into making this podcast. Also, if you're interested in leaving me a comment or chatting with me, you can always find me on your preferred social media platform, including Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Goodreads. Just search for Gabrielle Burchak. Until next time, carpe diem!